Good to be with you this evening. I spoke with David before the speech tonight, and he came up to me and asked me if my speech was going to be a short speech. And I thought maybe he knew what the speech was going to be about, because it's about redeeming the time. And so he was obviously interested in how we would redeem the time tonight, but I appreciated the question. I want to speak to you tonight about time, and especially those two verses at the end of the passage that was read, Ephesians 5, verses 15 and 16. See then yet that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Maybe some of us would be embarrassed as to how we use our time. And the question isn't just about how efficient we are with the use of our time, but what we do with our time. Not just as adults, what children, what you do with your time. All of us will have to give an account for every idle word that we speak, but also every idle moment that we spend. So what I want to speak about tonight is not rocket science. I'm not going to give some new revelation. Some of the things that I'll cover certainly will be very practical, but I hope it will be helpful for us, just as helping us to view the use of our time. The first half of Ephesians sets up something of our identity. It tells us who we are in Jesus Christ. We are those who have been chosen in Christ, predestinated unto the adoption of children. We have been regenerated by the Spirit of Christ. We have been given the life of Christ. We have been given faith. God looks upon us now as we are, as His dear children. So that's the first half of Ephesians. Now, in the second half of Ephesians, where our text is found, we have what grows out of our identity. We are dear children. Therefore, we are to walk as dear children of God. We are to walk as children of light. And part of our calling then, as children of light, and all of the second half of Ephesians deals with that calling, but part of that calling is to walk circumspectly, redeeming the time. And that's what I want to talk about this evening. Redeeming the time. In the first place, I want to touch on the main idea of that, what it is to walk circumspectly and to redeem the time. Secondly, not just the meaning, but then the manner. And here I get into some practical advice that I think is good to be reminded of. Like I said, won't be rocket science, but just good to bring to our minds some of the principles of redeeming the time. So the meaning, the manner of redeeming our time, and then thirdly, the motivation. Why should you and I be interested in redeeming the time? God calls each of us to take careful attention to how we use our time. As children of God, the text addresses us, "See that ye walk circumspectly." All of our walk, all of the way we live, is addressed by our text. Walk. And it's not talking about a literal walk down the street, but how we live our lives. Walk in this way. Walk circumspectly. I don't think most of us use that word in our vocabulary, but the idea is simply to walk strictly or walk diligently, walk carefully. How we live our lives is saying, pay careful attention to how you walk. And now to illustrate that, I like hiking in the Grand Canyon. I've done it a couple times. And there's a book that you can buy if you go to the visitor center in the Grand Canyon. And the title of that book is Death in the Grand Canyon. It tells you about all the ways that you can die in the Grand Canyon by falling off cliffs, getting caught in flash floods, drowning in the Colorado River. And the point of the book is not to entertain you with death, but to show you how to be careful. How to pay careful attention so that you don't die in the Grand Canyon. Well, now to walk circumspectly, to walk taking careful attention, is to walk taking the advice of the book. Walking circumspectly means to walk as, not as fools, but as wise. A fool hears about the dangers around him and proceeds to ignore the warnings. A fool in the Grand Canyon will walk on the edge of a cliff, not thinking to himself, if I stumble in just the smallest way, I could fall to my death. The consequences are great. He doesn't pay attention to the warning. That's a fool. A fool does not adapt himself to the reality of the danger. He doesn't walk circumspectly. The fool is told to take at least a gallon of water every day that you're hiking in the middle of the summer. And the fool says, I can get by. I don't need to take water. And so he puts himself in danger. To walk circumspectly means not to walk as fools, but as wise. A wise person hears the advice, hears about the danger. If he reads that book, now if he's in the Grand Canyon, he adapts himself to reality. He listens and he pays attention to the dangers around him. And then, as wise, adapting himself to reality, he can enjoy the surroundings. He can enjoy the park. There's the illustration of the fools and the wise in the Grand Canyon. What about us? As regards walking circumspectly in a spiritual sense now, we adapt ourselves to reality. We hear what God says in His Word. The word that warns us of the dangers, the word that warns us of the evil that surrounds us, and adapting ourselves to that word, we walk carefully. We take appropriate care to avoid the temptations and the pitfalls that we face. Walk circumspectly. Walk carefully. Not as fools, but as wise. And when we walk according to God's Word, taking the truths of God's Word, adapting ourselves to the truth that God proclaims in His Word, then we will also redeem the time. Those two go together. Verse 15 says, walk circumspectly. Well, how do you walk circumspectly? Well, one of the ways that you walk carefully is by redeeming the time. And if you look at those verses, they're connected. There's not a period between them. There's a comma at the end of verse 15. And we could shorten it this way. Walk circumspectly by redeeming the time. Redeem the time. And literally that word in the Greek, redeem, has the idea of going to the marketplace and buying something out of the marketplace. So taking it out of the marketplace. And that implies, when I go to the marketplace, that implies, if I redeem something, it implies what I redeem has value. That in the first place. Redeem the time implies the value of what I am called to redeem. And in the second place, to redeem something means it, when I see it has value, I want to go and pay what it takes to obtain that item of value. So redeeming is something that I do with intention. It's something that I go about deliberately. I see something, this has value, and I'm going to redeem it for myself. The text says, redeem the time. Well, of course, we can't lay down money and buy ourselves time, but the idea is this. I take intentional steps to make good use of the time that God gives me. Redeem the time. Value it. And then take intentional steps to use it in a good way. Make good use of it. Do what it takes to make good use of that time. And now I want to speak about just some very practical ways, that things that will help us, I believe, to redeem the time. The question is, how can you and I make the best use of our time? There are some wonderful sermons that you can hear on sermon audio, some giving very practical advice on redeeming the time. I found a book on time management by, I don't know if the man's a Christian. He doesn't bring out any specifically Christian principles, time management, Brian Tracy. giving some practical things, and I'm going to draw some things from different sources, just helping us to think about how we use our time. And for the sake of time, I'm not going to go through a laundry list of all the different ways. I want to focus on just the most helpful suggestions that I found as to redeeming the time. One of the things that struck me as I prepared for this speech was, first, the idea of knowing our values and principles. It might be a temptation simply to dive in and say, here's some ways to make the best use of our time, but it's important to know before you even think about how am I best going to use my time, we need to know what are our values and priorities. What's the most important thing at any given moment? What matters most in your life? What matters most in my life? What am I seeking? Because once I know that, that's going to dictate how I use my time. So it's good for us to step back and think about what are we living for. If I'm living for the applause of men, that's going to affect how I use my time. Or if I'm living this life because I want to live a life that's pleasing to God, that's going to affect how I use my time. How important is my relationship to my spouse? And how important is your relationship to your spouse? That's going to affect how you use your time. How important is your relationship to your children or to others in the church? That will affect decisions that we make about the use of our time. And do we see ourselves as dear children of God? Do we see ourselves as those who have been redeemed by the precious blood of Jesus Christ? That enters into our values and our priorities, and then that will determine how we use our time. That struck me preparing for this speech. How important it is to ask ourselves about our values and priorities. Is it a priority to get to work on time and to work a full day? That's going to grow out of our general values and priorities in life. Is it a priority? Do we see it as valuable to spend time with family members, with husband or wife? Is it a priority to worship God as often as I am able? Is it a priority to spend daily time in devotions, reading and meditating upon God's Word? What are your values and priorities? What are my values and priorities? That's foundational. That's the first thing we have to consider. If we're going to redeem the time, we have to know what our values and priorities are. And then once you know those, once you have that foundation set, then growing out of those values and priorities, the next principle is to have a plan. And this gets to the intentional nature of redeeming the time. If we're going to redeem the time, we have to be intentional about it. And if you read the books on time management, you need a plan. Not having a plan for each day, for the week, not having a plan is one of the greatest time robbers and time wasters. And that's not hard to see. The simplest illustration of that is you ladies, when you go to the store, if you have a plan, you make your shopping list. If you don't have a shopping list, and I've a number of times, Amy has texted me, "Can you send me a picture of my shopping list?" Amy's very good with how she uses her time. And she knows if she doesn't have that plan in front of her, she might have to wander up and down the aisles or sit there and think to herself, "Now, what was it that I needed to get?" And she has to spend all kinds of time coming up with those things that she needed to buy at the store. So having a plan, having a shopping list will make it all the more efficient to simply go get the things that you need and go on to the next thing. And if you don't have a plan and you go through the store, you get what you think you needed, you get home and you forgot the eggs, and now you got to go back again. And what was supposed to be a 15-minute outing, now you, with everything all said and done, it's now you've wasted an hour. Very simple to see how simply just having a plan will save all kinds of time. It's estimated that every minute that you spend planning, you save 10 minutes. And of course, there's a point that's going to drop off. You can't say, "I'm going to spend 10 hours planning today." But every minute, in general, that we spend making a plan is going to save 10 minutes worth of time. That principle of planning holds in all kinds of circumstances and situations. Simply having a plan. I read the story of a man and his wife. Just to illustrate this point, they were traveling from San Diego to Los Angeles. And the wife, as they're traveling, says to her husband, "Is Phoenix on the way to Los Angeles?" And the husband kind of looks at her questioningly, like, "Why do you ask?" "Well, we just passed a sign that said we're on the way to Phoenix." And he says, "Well, never mind. We're making good progress." And the point is, they didn't have a plan. They didn't have the road map to show where to go. So they were going in the absolute wrong direction and making good progress in the wrong direction is not making good progress. So having a plan, very practical. And how good, then how practical at the, maybe at the end of a day, for the next day, have a plan. Tomorrow I have to accomplish these specific things, and sometimes the ladies they already know what's on the plan, dinner time and whatnot, but how good for us simply to plan out for each day. Here's the main things I have to accomplish. And have them written out, just like a shopping list. We could have them in our heads, but if I just have two things in my head and I go to the store, and I don't have the list, if I don't have it written down, I can forget. What was it that I came for? So having a written plan, just a to-do list, all by itself, will help us to redeem the time. But now you can make that to-do list even more useful by prioritizing what's the most important, not just what I want to get done today, but what's the most important thing I need to get done today? No question about it. Well, that's one of your A lists. You can take your plan and prioritize. And this author, Tracy, recommends simply putting an A or a B or C or D or E next to each of the items on the list. Prioritizing, but they stand for different things. Of course, the A is the most important. I have to get this done today. There are serious consequences if I don't get this done. The doctor's appointment that I had to wait 3 weeks to get this appointment, that doctor's appointment is today. I have to go to that appointment. Other important things, I would say devotions in the morning would be an A priority, or devotions at some point, because I find if I don't make that an A priority, if I just make it a B, something that would be important but not absolutely necessary, well then sometimes it just falls off the plan. So what's absolutely important? That's the A. I have to get it done. B, important things that I should get done, but if I can wait till tomorrow, there's some flexibility. Filing your taxes. Some of you have done that recently. That's important. But if the deadline's not tomorrow, well, you can put it off another day. That would be a B. And C are the things that are nice to get done, but not absolutely necessary. And you can fill in the list of what that might be. Some might say, well, cleaning the shower is not absolutely necessary. Well, maybe the point does come where it becomes an A. A, B, C. D are the items to delegate. So we have the first ones are orders of priorities, but D, now this could apply to our families with children who can work. Items to delegate. Maybe moms delegate dishes to some of the children. And maybe there'll be a few broken dishes, but delegating frees up time to do other important things. That applies in business. If you're able to delegate and the person to whom you delegate is able to do the job satisfactorily, and you can use whatever number, if they can do it to 70% of what you're able to do it, well, now you delegate and that frees up valuable time. A, B, C, the D is the delegate, the E is eliminate. Eliminate it from the list. You made a list, but when you examine it, you say, that's not important at all. And if you don't eliminate it for today's list, eliminate it from your list in the future. Eliminate. And then just one more suggestion as regards that to-do list. Some will suggest to make a do-not-do list. So we have things that I know if I do that, that's going to draw me away. And once I start doing that, it's going to take me away from those important things. Absolutely, I will not do this thing today. Whatever that is, that we know perhaps is a time waster. Have a plan. So we have our set our values and priorities. That's the foundation. Make a plan that we prioritize those items that we want to get done and those that we have to get done. But then in the third place, the next aspect of redeeming the time, it's one thing to have a plan, but it's the next thing, another important thing, that we stay on track. If I have a plan written out, if I have the road map, but I don't follow the road map, well, that's kind of pointless then to even make the plan. So stay on track. Proverbs 12, verse 27. There's probably more lessons in this proverb, but the proverb says, "The slothful man roasteth not that which he took in hunting, but the substance of a diligent man is precious." Why didn't the slothful man roast what he took in hunting? He took the time. He went out and killed his deer or whatever, but then he does not actually end up roasting it. And he loses all his effort. Well, one reason that he didn't end up roasting what he killed was that he didn't count all that time as precious that he spent to kill that game. He doesn't finish what he started. He didn't stay on track. Maybe he killed his deer and then he got distracted. And so all the labor that he put into that in the first place, he loses. So, how important to stay on track. There's a story of Charles Schwab. At the time, this was back in the 1930s, he was the president of Bethlehem Steel. Charles Schwab was trying to figure out how to make the best use of his time. He was speaking to a management consultant. How can I best use my time? And he asked the man for his best piece of advice. And he said, "I'll pay you what would be a reasonable fee." And so the management consultant gave him advice something like this. Make your list, something of like what I said before. Make your to-do list in order of priority. The first thing is the most important priority, and I realize that there's going to be some times when we can't just follow the whole thing through, but make your list, order of priority, start with the first one, and work until you finish that first task. And don't go to anything else until you finish that first task, and then go to the second one. Not rocket science. And after you finish the second one, go to the third one. And so on down the list. And the consultant said, try that out for yourself, and if it works, tell your other employees about it, and then you can write me a check how much you think that would be worth. As far as I know, this is a true story. Anyway, after a few weeks, Charles Schwab sat down. This is in the 1930s, realized, so the dollars were worth more back then, but he cut a check for the consultant for $25,000. The point is just that advice to stay on track. And how often we can be sidetracked. The attraction of distraction. I have that sometimes. I'm working on the computer and the little bell rings for my email and I go right to my email. I wonder who that is. And the problem with that is that your mind is focused. You're just getting ready. If you're me and you were writing a sermon, if you're doing something, now your mind is distracted from that very thing where your mind has been focused. You lose your focus. You read the email. Now you have to take all the time to get back into that focus again. So avoid the attraction of distraction is the way Tracy put it. Stay on track. Making a plan and sticking to it. And of course, there's going to be times that something comes up. We can't stay with the plan. There's sometimes when the most important thing is not the first thing because it has to come later in the day. But here's something also to consider. And James speaks of that. When we make plans, we ought to say, if the Lord will. James 4, verse 15, if the Lord will, that is, if the Lord desires, we shall live and do this or that. So James is not saying, don't make any plans. We ought to make plans. But make those plans saying, if the Lord will. And that means when we make those plans, we're also keeping the Lord, our God, in mind. Our plans are not in the abstract without any reference to God at all. Along the way, if things change, we can still ask the question, what is the best use of my time right now? What's the best use? And there's many times we would find, we would say to ourselves, this is not the best use of my time. So know your priorities and values. That's the foundation. Make plans. Stick to those plans. And I realize that all sounds good on paper. Actually carrying through is another thing. But I want to just talk a little bit about thinking wisely. We need wisdom as we're making plans, as we're carrying out our plans. We need wisdom. And there are all kinds of different principles that can help, but we need wisdom to know how much of a priority to make something. Is it really a priority to play this video game or to do this other activity? We need wisdom to know how much of a priority to make various aspects of our lives. And connected to that, then, we need wisdom to know how much effort to put into something that really is a priority. And I use a minister as an example because that is something I would be familiar with. But I could spend an entire week, all my waking hours, working on polishing a sermon. But there are other things, important things, that also have to be done. So we need wisdom. How to know how much of a priority to make something. There's a rule that's often used in time management, the 80-20 rule, that basically says 20% of the effort will get 80% of the job done. And then, if you want to get to perfection, you're going to spend another 80% of your time to get that last 20% done. We just need wisdom to know when to move on, to know how much effort to spend on a particular task, to know when to stop and when to move on. We need wisdom to know what is truly important in the short term and also what's important in the long term. So we talked about a daily plan, but if we want to get certain things done, it's good to have our monthly calendars. It's good to make long-term plans. What do I want to accomplish this year? And that could be any number of things. In the church, we want to have a particular speech, or we want to have a particular program. Well, that takes planning. What is truly important in the long term as well as the short term? We need wisdom to know where we can use our gifts to the best of our ability and where it would be good to use the skills of others. So there's that idea of delegating. We need wisdom to know how to avoid procrastinating, to know how to start a job that seems so big, seems like such a big mountain. How could we ever climb that mountain? So we need wisdom to know how to take that first step. Or wisdom how to divide a job into manageable portions so we don't see this huge mountain again. And wisdom to see the sin of not doing what God calls us to do. And I find it encouraging then when we think of the wisdom that we need. James 1 verse 5 says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given to him. God will give wisdom to His people who ask Him for wisdom. He wants us to ask for wisdom. He doesn't get upset at us when we ask for wisdom. Father, give me the wisdom to use my time wisely. Give me the strength, too, that I would stick to those tasks. Wisdom and strength to use our time in a wise way. Well, we talked about the meaning then of redeeming the time. the manner, giving some practical advice for how to redeem that time, but why should you and why should I want to redeem the time? And that's implied in the text. The reason is implied in the text. The reason is that time is precious. When we are called to redeem the time, the very idea of redemption implies the preciousness of what we are called to redeem. You don't redeem something that's worthless. You redeem something that's precious. It has value. And if it has value, you treat it as something valuable. Again, going back to the Grand Canyon. If you're stuck in the middle of the canyon on a hot summer day, water has great value. If you're far away from water, but you have a water source, you say, that is valuable. I'm not going to just pour it out on the sand. I'm not going to use a gallon to wash my hands when I know I need to survive on that. Well, time is precious. And the more precious something is, the more we will want to make good use of it. Time is precious. And that's not hard to see either. Time is precious. Just on a physical level, it affects our well-being, how I use my time. If I spend my time as a couch potato all my days and I don't exercise, that's going to affect my physical well-being. If I waste my time in the workplace, that's going to affect the well-being of the company I work for. In my case, it would be in the church. In your case, in the workplace. But if someone wastes their time in the workplace, not only does it make that company less productive, it may mean we get dismissed from that workplace. That affects our well-being, how we use our time. How I spend my time with my family, that affects the well-being of my relationship with my family. If I don't spend time with my wife and my children, that is going to affect our relationship. Time is precious because it affects our well-being on a human level. But how much more is that the case as regards our spiritual welfare? Time is precious. And so how we use our time. If we don't spend our time at all in any spiritual exercises, how do we expect to grow? And I don't say that our faithfulness or our failure determines whether God saves us or not. God is the God of our salvation. He saves us. But there is that aspect. If I don't find time to read the Bible in family devotions or in personal devotions, I'm going to miss out on something that's going to affect my spiritual welfare. If I don't spend time coming to hear the Word preached on a regular basis, that's going to affect my spiritual welfare. Does that not show how precious time is? How we spend our time is connected to our spiritual growth. That in the first place. Our welfare, in the most general sense, our spiritual welfare, our physical welfare, you could say our financial welfare. Time is precious because it affects our welfare. But then in the second place, time is precious because we have so little of it. I know when I was younger, I thought time goes pretty slowly, but ask somebody who's a little older and they will tell you time flies. We only have a short amount of time that God gives to each one of us. 80 or 90 years, if God brings us to that point, will pass before we know it. And we will have to give an account of the time that God has given. Time is precious because of how little we have. 90 years is not a lot of time. And then connected to that, time is precious because we don't know if we'll even live to be that long, to be that old, if we live to be 90 or 100. Time is precious because we don't know how much we have left. Maybe God gives one more week and then He might take somebody from the congregation, or another year or 20 years. But we don't know how much time we have. And the less that we have, or even not knowing how much we have left, makes it more precious to us. Time is precious in the fourth place because we can never get it back. It's like that water that's poured out in the desert sand. You can never collect it back and drink it. Once it's gone, it's gone. And that shows that time is a precious commodity. The whole idea of redeeming implies that preciousness of time. But then this as well, it's precious because it's not really ours. The 90 years or whatever, however many years God gives us, every single second we are stewards of. God gives us that time, and it's not really ours. If somebody lends you a brand new fancy car, it's not yours. They say, take care of it for me. You treat it as precious. Because it's not yours. You're a steward. God gives us a precious commodity. Is time more precious than money? You can never buy back time that's gone. Time is precious, and God makes us stewards of that time. He says, here is the time that I give you. We don't know the exact time, but He says, I have given this to you. Now use that time as a steward. And to the degree that we fail to use the time as stewards, to that degree we have missed the mark. We have sinned against God. Time is precious. But then in the second place, why should you and I be motivated to redeem the time? The text says, because the days are evil. We ought to be motivated to redeem the time because the days are evil. That is to say, and this is in the broadest sense, the days are evil. Those days are full of temptations. Temptations that will take us off of the path of obedience, away from serving God. Temptations. All around us, the devil as a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour, the world tempting us with all kinds of pleasures and treasures, our old man also desiring to wander from God. The days are evil. There's so much corruption around us. We won't be able to dedicate our time to God without deliberate, intentional action. If we don't take that intentional approach, if we don't actually go out and redeem it, do what it takes to set ourselves to employ it wisely, if we don't take that intentional approach, well, those days will just go to corruption. The days will eat up the time. If we're not intentional in the good use of our time, the default will be that we waste it. The days are evil. The problem is not that we don't have enough time. We can never say to God, I don't have enough time to do what you have called me to do. That's not the problem. The problem is not a lack of time. The problem is that we don't use it as we ought to use it. We waste the time that God gives to us. Some of us waste the time by walking in sin. There are those who are unregenerated altogether, and they spend their whole lives walking in sin. They spend their whole lives living for themselves, seeking the pleasures and treasures of the world. That's not redeeming the time. By their wicked waste of time, they're drawing to themselves greater misery, those who walk in wickedness and unbelief. But there's others who waste their time in idleness. Proverbs 18, verse 9 says, he that is slothful in his work is brother to him that is a great waster. And the waster is a destroyer. The one who is slothful in his work, who does not accomplish the work that he ought to accomplish, he doesn't build the wall as high as he ought to build the wall on that particular day, is brother to the destroyer who comes and destroys that wall And maybe the end product is the same half of a wall. The slothful man is brother to the destroyer. So there are those who waste their time in wickedness. There's those who waste their time in idleness. But there are also those who waste their time in worldly pursuits. The man who's so busy at work that he fails to spend time with his wife and family is not redeeming the time as he ought to redeem the time. Or the woman who moves up the career ladder but has no time for the things of God, no time for her husband, no time for her family. She's not redeeming the time. From a worldly perspective, you could say, well, she's following that career path and she continues to move on up. But that's not redeeming the time. The man who has all kinds of time for hobbies and no time for God is not redeeming the time. And we're not condemning hobbies altogether. There's a place. There's a place for taking vacations even. Jesus went away with his disciples and rested. But they all served a greater purpose. And so ultimately, I want to bring it back to this. Redeeming the time means that we use our time for the glory of God. However we use it, we use our time for the glory of God. If it's not for the glory of God, then it's not redeeming the time. That's what the whole second half of Ephesians is about. The first half of Ephesians ends at chapter 3, verse 20. Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20 says, "Now unto him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us, unto him be glory in the church by Christ Jesus, throughout all ages, world without end. Unto him be glory." That's how the first half of Ephesians ends, with a prayer that God would be glorified. And then Ephesians goes on to speak of the practical ways in which we would glorify God. And so the calling to redeem the time is not just to use our time efficiently to enrich ourselves, but the calling to redeem the time is a calling to glorify God with the time that He has given to us. Glorify God in your personal lives and in your families and in the church. In our own strength we fail. And that's another reason that that verse is so significant. Chapter 3, verse 20, "Now unto him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us." When you and I think of redeeming the time for the glory of God, I hope we all see how far we fall short. But also that we would see that there is grace in Jesus Christ. And we ought to pray, as the apostle prays, that God would work in us that we would redeem the time, that we would use the time that He gives us. And my prayer is that we would give ourselves more and more to the glory of God with the time that He gives us. Thank you for your attention. Let's